Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are talking about an important issue: am I even eligible for government financial assistance as a cannabis business owner? We are joined by the managing attorney of the Hoban Law Group, Garrett Graff. Garrett, thank you for taking the time to be here today and talk about this important subject.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Eric. Glad to be a part of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell us, just in the last couple of days, how have you been affected by coronavirus? Imagine you're working from home. Tell us a little bit about how this has shaped out for you.
Certainly, trying to make the best of it as best as possible, between meeting clients' needs and working remotely and creating plenty of scheduling and coordination issues amongst family needs, between having a young child at home, sharing an office space with my wife, and having some house projects that were already in the works ongoing through this time as well. So it's presented some challenges, but nothing that can't be worked through, and certainly trying to do our part in helping both our clients and family and society in general push through during these trying times.
Absolutely. And that kind of brings us to the subject matter that we're talking about, which is the coronavirus has certainly had a big impact on all kinds of businesses, but specifically, what should cannabis business owners be thinking about right now? What are the issues that should be top of mind for them?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it really depends on which aspect of the business you fall into, right? Whether it be your employee and you're simply trying to make ends meet and simply get a paycheck and or seek some sort of consideration or stimulus from various governmental agencies, or then as a cannabis business, as an owner, whether you're able to cash flow and fund payroll for your employees, and whether you may need to make adjustments, whether it be salary adjustments or unfortunately in some cases layoffs and other sort of amendments or tweaks there. From a governmental standpoint, there's a variety of things. On the marijuana side, as well as on the hemp side, you're seeing this idea of the designation of what is deemed an essential business, a quote-unquote essential business, where you're seeing several municipalities and or state governments deeming non-essential businesses to shut down. So, for example, if you are a hemp manufacturing facility or a marijuana manufacturing facility or a marijuana dispensary, trying to ascertain whether you are, one of these essential businesses or rather non-essential, and thus whether you're able to remain operational. There's been a strong push governmentally at both municipal and state levels, for example, in California, New York, and even here in Colorado, to ensure that these businesses remain open as long as possible, albeit with employees and consumers in the case of dispensaries, exercising and practicing social distancing. With respect to financial aid, certainly I think it will be interesting to see how stimulus packages from governmental agencies may or may not apply as to hemp businesses versus as to marijuana ones. And so to comment on that for a moment, we are seeing these sorts of stimulus packages being proposed at the federal level through the federal government. Because marijuana remains federally illegal, presumably marijuana businesses would not be provided any benefit of those stimulus packages. Whereas hemp, being affirmatively regulated by the USDA for purposes of cultivation production, there perhaps could be stimulus packages available as part of that. Again, much of this remains to be seen as a lot of these legislative, regulatory, and or financial fixes are still in the works and very fluid and quickly evolving. However, at the state and or local level, where both hemp and or marijuana may be legal depending on which state or municipality you're located in, there could be boons, there could be some stimulus able to be provided, whether it be an extension for filing taxes or other forms of aid. Some states and or localities are calling for landlords to defer lease payments on property. So there's a variety of components at the state and the local level, or even with respect to landlords, that'd be a private example of where the private sector will afford some financial freedom or relaxation, so to speak, to help shepherd the industry and the economy generally through these tough times.
So Garrett, you mentioned a lot of very interesting topics. Let's try to help our listeners triage this, right? As you're sitting here today, people are trying to keep their businesses moving forward, whether that's production or manufacturing or some service providers continuing to provide services. And the unknown, of course, is whether consumers will continue to buy the products. Will stores even be open? Will clients continue to demand services? Will clients pay those invoices, 60, 90 days down the road when they become mature? But in the meantime, you have to continue on that track, but you also have to be mindful of what might be out there to help you. And you always can't do both at the same time. So let's try to help people focus in on those things. You mentioned different help packages, if you will, emergency assistance type programs, and they're rolling out slowly, but we've seen the federal government come out with an SBA, a Small Business Association, a package where they're eligible for low or zero cost loans, and that presents some challenges. There's local and state packages. How would you go about it if you were sitting back as a business owner with a lot to do, but understanding that this is of primary importance because it might be the difference between laying off that employee or not? How do you approach it? Where do you go out and find this information?
Yeah, thankfully, in this day and age, a lot of this information is aggregated online very quickly. So, for example, some simple Google searches, as you said, the Small Business Administration, or a lot of this obviously is falling underneath the hashtag or other appropriate tag for purposes of the coronavirus. And being able to identify, what are your federal, state, and local programs for purposes of economic stimulus. As you said, at the federal level, it's the Small Business Association, and then depending on what municipality and or state you fall in, looking at these similar agencies at the state level. For example, we're in Colorado. There is a Colorado department or agency devoted to economic development. And, of course, they're spearheading those efforts within Colorado. Given long hold times on the phone, et cetera, looking online truly is the easiest way to go about doing that.
Because different levels of government will treat the topic differently, meaning as you point out, at the federal level, hemp has a semblance of legality, at least from the cultivation and production standpoint. And then marijuana is clearly a Schedule I narcotic, a Schedule I drug that's prohibited, even though we've got sort of a wink and a nod that allows the industry to go forward by virtue of different spending amendments over the years. My point is this. If I'm going to apply for any of those emergency assistance programs, and I'm a marijuana business, would you express hesitancy in doing so? How could we even get answers to whether or not the person would be eligible in this environment?
That's a great question. For purposes of state and local, offerings of assistance, I don't particularly have much resistance or hesitance there, given that it is, in fact, lawful there. And in many cases, these municipalities and or states have deemed several types of marijuana businesses to, in fact, be essential, especially with respect to provision of medical as opposed to adult use marijuana to patients within that state or within that municipality. So at that level, no, I don't necessarily see hesitance. Now, obviously, at the state or local level, the varying offers of assistance are going to vary widely. At the federal level, with respect to the SBA, generally speaking, yes, I would, largely see hesitance. I have not, spoken to the SBA directly, but I would presume oftentimes that may not be an avenue for marijuana companies specifically, whereas, on the hemp side, I do foresee that as being a potential option.
And as we look at these programs and how they develop, one of the things that really restrains these businesses from operating like most other businesses under federal tax law is the 280E prohibition. In other words, marijuana businesses are not allowed to take most common deductions on their tax returns. That, of course, has put marijuana businesses in a predicament. And while hemp has been deemed to be no longer a controlled substance, There is confusion amongst various agencies at every single level, including law enforcement. That confusion has also bled over, unfortunately, into our tax code application. So can you talk for a moment about how 280E has been perhaps misconstrued or has affected the industry, and how relief under 280E as an alternative might be something that the federal government could do in sort of a passive way to extend benefits to the cannabis industry?
Yeah, certainly. And are you speaking with respect to marijuana businesses specifically, or as well as to hemp?
Well, let's start with hemp, because while you and I both know that hemp is clearly a legal substance in many ways under the new laws, that has not exactly made its way to all agencies at all levels. So let's talk about some of the confusion there and then move over to the marijuana side of the industry.
Sure. First and foremost, with respect to, most governmental agencies, FDA, IRS, insert three-letter federal acronym, many of these agencies are, reducing staffing to, only essential workforce. Their resources are becoming more and more limited. They're being far more selective in terms of, their enforcement protocols, et cetera. So for purposes of the IRS, what that means is, the IRS would already take a very long time for purposes of auditing, reporting, processing taxes. That is only being further extended at this point, to the extent that even tax filings have now been delayed for a few months' time. From that perspective, I think that there is some, passive benefit being realized for, all businesses. As to hemp and the confusion there, yes, IRS 280E relates to the prohibition or preclusion of taking certain deductions, non-COGS, non-cost of goods sold deductions for purposes of the sale or trafficking of federally controlled substances. That, of course, would apply to marijuana, given marijuana remains federally scheduled as a Schedule I substance. That would not apply, however, to hemp, at least on paper. There has been, to some extent, some confusion, at least conceptually, as to this issue. Is hemp a subset of marijuana or not? Much of that is being cleared up. I do think you still see case-by-case instances, where there's confusion. Oftentimes, however, those only come into play when there's actually an audit engaged in by IRS auditors. They're looking at back taxes, making sure the actual taxes paid were what was owed. I would say most hemp companies are not conceding the idea that they are subject to 280E up front in their tax filings, whereas you may well be doing so on the marijuana side. So there could be some burdens eased, probably more so on the marijuana side than on the hemp side, because I would say the vast majority of hemp companies are already filing taxes as a conventional, food manufacturing business. And thus, there's not really any sort of relaxation of 280E expenses or taxation that the federal government could relieve. If we want to flip over to the marijuana side, when you apply 280E, that means you no longer can deduct things like labor. A dispensary cannot deduct labor associated with the trafficking or the sale of marijuana. So what that means in dollars and cents is an effective tax rate for these businesses that, could be normally as low as, 20, 30, 40%, that's now 60, 70, 80, 90%. And so in terms of providing financial assistance or aid to those companies, certainly that is a way, if the federal government, from a policy perspective, were to somewhat quasi condone or endorse marijuana businesses, by refunding or deferring or otherwise vanquishing treatment under 280E, at least temporarily, the money that makes up that difference of, 20, 30, 40% of the effective tax rate for these businesses could certainly serve to provide a boon and keep the, economy rolling a bit. So
that's an important point, and that's well articulated. And another thing that folks need to pay attention to are contracts. In light of the fact that contracts typically require people to act or perform in a certain way or make payments or deliver promises by certain dates, and provide timelines and certain requirements for both sides of a contract. Given the fact that we're effectively locked down, told to not leave home, to work from home, it has absolutely interrupted business across the United States and frankly around the world, which is quite remarkable considering that there's 7.5 billion people in the world and they're all being told to stay home in some form or fashion. But if you look at contracts, if you look at things that people need to pay attention to, there's some terms out there that people might hear that I'd like to have us discuss a little bit. And some of these terms are things that you and I might have brushed off while we were in law school at one point or another, but now they've become extremely important provisions. Something called a force majeure clause, something called an act of God provision. Can we talk about contracts for a moment? And, you know, in the absence of speaking hypothetically, if you have any specific examples, let's talk about how we portray and interpret those types of provisions to help people understand what they do or don't have to do, given the fact that everything's basically at a standstill or close to it.
No, it's an excellent point. It's certainly become problematic. You know, just to use by way of example, conferences. You know, we've seen over the course of the past month and likely for the next several months, cancellation and or postponement of a wide array of conferences. All these conferences, implicate a number of contracts. The conference promoter's contract with the facility that will be used to host the conference, as well as in the conference promoter's contract with each of the sponsors who are paying, a certain amount of money in order to, have a certain presence at that conference. There's plenty of economic impact, as well as in contractual impact. As you said, force majeure versus or otherwise known as act of God. You're right. It's not a provision that many lawyers think much about these days. They rarely come into play. But I can certainly tell you, I suspect just about every agreement you see for the next decade is going to have a force majeure because of this pandemic. The purpose of a force majeure or act of God provision is to contemplate what if something happens that entirely prohibits performance that could not have been anticipated or was not the fault of either of the parties to the contract. Thus, this pandemic is the perfect example. If you are the conference promoter and I'm the hotel that is renting out our ballroom to you for purposes of your conference, neither one of us brought this pandemic upon one another. Neither one of us can control the fact that attendees can no longer travel to attend our conference, that food vendors can no longer provide food for our conference, the fact that the sponsors themselves may not have the cash flow or the bandwidth in order to sponsor this conference. And so by virtue of that, how do you basically unlock or unravel a contract? So that's the purpose of the force majeure or act of God provision, is to determine how to nullify or otherwise walk back an agreement that was the purpose of which was frustrated by neither party's own doing or own fault. I see that provision in some agreements, not in all agreements. In some forms of that provision, you actually see epidemics specifically referenced, which would obviously give rise to implicating or use of that provision. What I will say, and what I continue to see government officials calling for each and every day, is with or without that sort of act of God provision, and to avoid huge wave of litigation over this issue when clearly everyone is suffering economically already, is how about we all come together societally, with the humanitarian aspect of this, and figuring out informal resolutions to the issue. As I said, landlords simply, either waiving, rental payments or at least deferring them, mortgage companies, even for individuals who are giving a 90-day, no payment necessary offering for those in financial need. Seeing a number of these contracts, whether the agreement remains valid or has been nullified by a force majeure clause, seeing parties going above and beyond in recognition that, hey, as part of these ongoing relationships, as part of supply chain management, as part of the recognition that, once we as a society get through this pandemic, we still need to have supply chain relationships. So out of respect for those relationships, how can we work constructively together to resolve those? So we're seeing a lot of amendments to agreements, not out of an adversarial stance in terms of, you know, we want to sue you or you're disputing funds, but rather how do we work together? How do we make this work such that we can maintain the supply chain, maintain the relationships, such that the economy, you know, holistically can proceed forward as constructively as possible?
Well, Garrett, I'm glad you brought up events because we're going to talk to a number of event organizers who have had to deal with those exact problems and, you know, adjust their plans accordingly in the wake of this pandemic. Bob, I'm interested in your opinion. Can parties effectively invoke force majeure to avoid obligations in light of coronavirus?
Well, the fundamental question is the coronavirus an act of God, right? Is it something that we that anybody had any control over? Another provision to look at is something called impossibility of performance, right? If governments are prohibiting transactions, perhaps movement or transportation, can companies under contracts technically comply with their obligations to perform a specific task if they're not allowed to move or do things? So that's another provision to look at. But ultimately, it remains to be seen how these will be treated. It remains to be seen whether or not this squarely falls under those force majeure, act of God type clauses, although it clearly seems that that would apply here. But courts are the ultimate arbiter of how these things are determined. To Garrett's point, if you've got somebody on the other side of an obligation or a contract, communication is your best tool, your best asset right now. Work together, collaborate. As we've talked about with this crisis, people need to collaborate no matter how strong or healthy their business was prior to 2 weeks ago. They need to begin looking forward on how they can work together, form strategic partnerships, communicate, and work through these things. If that can't occur and disputes arise about contracts, then you're going to have to go to a court and have that court and or an arbitration type scenario have some third party that you don't know that's trying to meter out justice on a case-by-case basis, decide those questions for you. So the advice that you're hearing, and I think the best practice here, as Garrett points out, is communicate. Go out and have those conversations now so it doesn't become a sticking point. Don't pretend it's going to go away. Don't pretend that everything's going to miraculously be better in 3 to 6 weeks or months, whatever the case might be. Instead, take the bull by the horns, communicate, say we are doing our best to keep our business moving forward. We understand that there's obligation X and Y and Z. And let's talk right now about how we can mitigate problems that will come out of that and how we can work together.
And Bob, to that point, I mean, you know, first of all, we don't yet have enough time under our belt with this particular pandemic, you know, to see what courts or mediators or some third party, you know, is ruling in this case. You know, we can certainly extrapolate from, you know, previous instances of, you know, similar types of scenarios or settings and then how courts have found in that nature. But Bob, I don't know about you. I'm not sure I want to be the one representing a landlord, for example, that's still trying to force a tenant that doesn't have any money or cash flow at this point in time to continue to pay rent. That's certainly not a good look in front of any sort of judge or court or whatnot. Furthermore, then you have concerns about even if you do win such a lawsuit or arbitration, et cetera, if the other side doesn't have an ability to pay and they told you that up front, and what good does that piece of paper saying you win get you? So to Bob's point, and I think what we're, you know, both saying is, you know, that there's a number of different values and offered by simply communicating and working constructively through the situation with everyone else involved.
Well, and this discussion is not intended to get political, but if you really think about some of the options on the table right now, if you think about, you know, specific allocations for individuals of, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 as a one-time or multi-time payment to get people through this, it seems to me that while that might be attractive to a lot of people, the better public policy might be for the government to take money and resources on a larger scale and work it at a higher level. So people are relieved from obligations, not so that they get a check in their pocket, the majority of which will not be spent on day-to-day necessities, but rather other things that would get in the way. So as this evolves, all of those questions, for better or for worse, will be answered. We can only sit here and think about these things, but the important thing is that we are moving forward, that we're adapting and adopting new patterns of behavior, considering the fact that things probably don't get back to quote-unquote normal anytime soon.
Yeah, and just to shift the topic a little bit, and I know we're going to have you on again soon, Garrett, so that we can talk about this in more depth, but we just had Stephen Hahn, the head of the FDA, recently come out and say that trying to pull CBD products off the shelves would just be a fool's errand. I know a lot of people were looking forward to maybe getting some more certainty and regulatory clarity this year from the FDA. I imagine they now have bigger fish to fry. What are your thoughts on kind of what's going to come down the pipeline from FDA in regards to hemp regulations this year?
Yeah, I mean, even before newly appointed Commissioner Hahn, issued that update to Congress, I think many of us, that are closely clued into the issues, understood and recognized that likely there's, little conclusion or finalization of anything coming anytime soon. That's only further bolstered at this point by the coronavirus, but even prior to that, you sold things like, impeachment proceedings in D.C. and a presidential campaign this year, and a number of other issues impacting the ability of Congress, FDA, and other agencies, from determining pathways forward for purposes of CBD regulation. As you said, that's probably a much larger topic on a variety of fronts. But, as applied to, this pandemic, what we're seeing from FDA, as I previously said, IRS, just about any governmental agency, federal, state, or local out there, state health departments, local health departments, they are all trying to optimize very limited resources at this point in time. So FDA has already come out and generically commented, that many of their, regularly scheduled periodic site inspections and facility audits will no longer occur. There is certainly a priority based upon optimizing the use of resources for high priority or emergency issues. So as we know it, for purposes of local application filings, state application filings, federal registrations and audits, all of these things will be delayed across the board. We're seeing the same thing happen at state and local levels for purposes of, health department inspections, processing of marijuana applications when the state marijuana agency's offices are closed, processing of hemp applications ahead of growing season here in a couple months when the Department of Agriculture is closed. So I guess the ultimate reality is all of these things are going to be delayed across the board. And that has little to nothing to do with hemp, marijuana, CBD, or anything else cannabis related specifically, everything related to the pandemic itself. At the end of the day, we already anticipated CBD regulation being slow moving from FDA anyways. So how much of a delay this is, it's hard to tell, given that, while they might lose some time now, perhaps they pick up some time, months from now, as hopefully or ideally some of these issues related to the pandemic are slowed down.
Certainly. Hurry up and wait. It's true for a lot of us who are stuck at home right now and social distancing. Nonetheless, Garrett, yeah, we really appreciate you coming on and talking about all these important subject matters to a lot of us out there. There's a lot of uncertainty, and these are certainly the questions that we should be asking, we should be thinking about in a time like this. Any parting thoughts from you or Bob?
Ultimately, I think it's just important to remain hopeful and optimistic, right? It's very easy to turn on the news right now and fear or feel as though, all the messaging is doomsday. And, certainly there are plenty of issues that need to be worked through here, as we discussed here, whether it be governmental closures, financial aid packages, or the works, there's a number of things across the board. But at the end of the day, if we all work together and all put a little bit of elbow grease into it, I certainly think that there's plenty of opportunity for many people to come through the other side well and in a way that we can grow not just this industry, but societally across the board from this experience. And so a lot of that just simply comes down to some of those easy things, such as, you know, holding optimism on a day-to-day basis, especially while you're stuck at home, like you said.
Well, Garrett, well said. And again, thanks for joining us. Much appreciated. I'll leave with this thought, and it's something we've said before. Panic is absolutely contagious, but so is leadership. And if you can sit back, examine things, and proceed and work with others, that will catch on and that will take over and displace the panic. So thanks for your time, Garrett. Have a good rest of your day, good weekend, and we'll talk with you soon.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
You too.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minutes special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.